Gerrit Cole's having Tommy John surgery today. Can the New York Yankees replace him? Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Tuesday, March 11th, your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on the Twitter machine. Tell all your friends, firstpitchpodcast.com, to get their daily news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. And Troy, continuing with our division previews, we're going to get to the Washington Nationals later. We're going to get to the story about the Rays being pushed to sell the team. We're going to get to a really weird ranking of the best lineups in baseball from MLB. But first, we've got to continue the story. I think this is the cover story now for 3 days. About Gerrit Cole is confirmed to need Tommy John surgery. He will miss all of the 2025 season. And while we don't know as of yet the exact surgery he's going to have, is it going to be conventional Tommy John? Is it going to be Tommy John with a brace or whatever? He will miss part of 2026 as well. And the question now shifts to what can the Yankees do to replace him? Because you and I talked yesterday about this rotation is now Max Fried, Carlos Rodon, Marcus Stroman, and then your two main depth options you had in Clark Schmidt and Will Warren. What do you think the odds are that they're able to get a trade done in spring training for another arm? Or is this, they're just going to have to wait until later in the year to grab a quality guy when somebody falls out of contention?
Yeah, it's going to take a lot to get a trade done now as opposed to later in the year, even with the teams that are bottom dwellers and have pieces that they can move, just because you're trading for a longer control of a guy than you normally would at the trade deadline or something. It's going to take a lot of prospect capital from them, or even some major league pieces, depending on who they trade with. But it's something that they really need to start looking into if they haven't already, because it's their rotation's not great now with Gerrit Cole gone. It was already not the best. It wasn't as deep as a lot of other rotations in baseball after Max Fried and Gerrit Cole. But now with Gerrit Cole gone, Luis Hill out for most of the season, it's a poor unit. It's a very weak unit, and it's going to be hard for the New York Yankees to contend in the American League East.
Hey, I think I saw something yesterday that said after losing Luis Gill and
Cole
and Gerrit Cole. Wow, I'm sorry. Gill and Cole, this time change is messing me up. After losing Gill and Cole, it went from like a top 10 unit to a bottom 10 unit. And I think it's to your point, everybody had to shift up a couple spots. Like Max Fried was your number two entering the season. That's fine. But like Marcus Stroman was at best a number five. And right now on the depth chart, based on experience and career production, he's your number three, and that's just not a good place to be. So, yeah, they got to do something. But the question is like, what can you do to get better right now in the trade market? You kind of touched on it. It's going to be very expensive to go out and get a guy, a major leaguer via trade right now. And so I think they're going to have to do some signings. And you know, to bring in pieces that can help them out, like maybe it's a Lance Lynn, maybe it's a Kyle Gibson, something like that. Now that Lance Lynn can keep his beard. But they do have, like, there's a little bit of factors in both directions that impact this. On the good side, reportedly, according to ESPN, the Yankees had insurance on Gerrit Cole's deal. So they'll recoup about, typically the insurance covers about like 75% of the portion of their salary. So they'll recoup some of that. But the downside is they are easily in the CBT. And so they are taxed dollar for dollar at 100% for any additional player salaries they take on. So if they sign a guy to a $5 million deal, it costs them $10 million for that player. they have to spend $10 million to keep that guy. So, you know, if you sign a Kyle Gibson, let's just go with that, or a Lance Lynn, you're paying them $5 million, but you're paying the league an additional $5 million just to have that guy. Now, the insurance money, I think, can help cover some of that, right? You're going to get some of Cole's money back, but it's still a complication. And I do think that's another reason why a trade right now, one, it would be very expensive from a prospect perspective. And this is not a team, I feel like, that has a ton of prospect capital left that they really want to move. But the flip side is, like, Sandy from the Marlins is making $17 million in change right now. If you pick him up right now, you spend $34 million to roster him. And is he worth that? Probably. But how many pitchers are on the trade market right now or could be available via a Godfather trade right now that are worth double their salary? But you have to do it because it feels like looking towards you're getting into the back end of this competitive window with such an old roster. You've got to do it, right? You have to do something, a signing or something to reinforce this rotation.
Yes, 100%. I completely agree with you. It's Sandy Alcantara would be a good fit up there with the Yankees. Even though he is coming off of Tommy John surgery, we don't know. Even though he said he doesn't have a pitch count or innings limit or anything like that, of course there is one. Like he's going to say that because he wants to say that. He doesn't want people to kind of question what he's capable of doing this year, but there is one. Especially in his contract year, even if the team doesn't put one on him, he's putting one on him because it's a contract year.
Wait. Alcantara's in a contract year? He has more years of control.
He's
a free agent this year and next year, and he has a $21 million option for 27. It's Dylan Cease and Michael King that are in the contract years.
You're right. My bad. Yep. I don't know why I thought Sandy Alcantara was a free agent after this year. But
he's got 3 years of control if you pick up the option. And really good prices, too. 17, 17, 21. He's going to be the most desired guy on the trade market. And so, my point was, I don't see how, the Yankees couldn't get Garrett Crochet. They tried, and they couldn't beat Boston's deal. You're in a similar boat here, unless you give away all of the rest of your top prospects, right? Unless you're willing to move Spencer Jones, unless you're willing to move, you know, one of shortstops, George Lombard or Roderick Arias, unless you're willing to move, you know, multiple top prospects, which, again, it's a weaker farm than a lot of the people's are, you're not going to be able to beat other teams when these guys come available. That's the issue you have here, because Sandy has 3 years of control. He has the historical performance. You know, the only question you have is what's his workload this year for Tommy John? Because he's looked great in spring.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. But maybe, if it's not Sandy because of how expensive it's going to be, maybe they can go to the Padres and say, hey, can we have King back? But there are certainly options out there available to the Yankees to make a trade for. Sandy Alcantara, Dylan Cease, Michael King, Luis Castillo with the Mariners, if the Mariners are willing to part with Castillo, who is also under contract for 3 more years. I did look that one up before I brought him up. But nice. But it's just the main issue is whether or not the Yankees are willing to spend that prospect capital that it's going to take to get any of those guys on
that the roster. Limited prospect capital, and whether when those guys come available, they can outbid others. I do think the path forward here is there are so many frontline starting pitchers that could be available because they're in contract years, but you're waiting for their teams to fall out of it. And I think the issue you have is with the expanded playoffs, it takes a lot longer for guys to fall out of it. I think the way that New York's going to have to navigate this is use the insurance money to cover the luxury tax bill on some signings, right? And then hope that can get you to the trade deadline, because somebody's going to fall out of this, right? Somebody who's a contender is going to have a disappointing year. Like the Astros, they flipped Kyle Tucker, right? Framber Valdez is coming up on, is I think, in the final year of his deal, right? If the Astros fall out of contention, do they move him? The Diamondbacks somehow stumble. I don't think they will, but if they somehow stumble, Zach Gallen's in the final year of his deal. You know, Robbie Ray with the Giants, $25 million each of the last 2 years. The Giants kind of don't want to spend money. You could see a scenario where Buster Posey wants to dump that contract. So, like, there's options, to your point, the Padres, right? King and Cease. If they fall out of the playoff race, do they move one of or both of those guys? It's just a question of, to me, can you make some signings and bridge to get there? And then even if you do, do you have the pieces in the farm system? You have to hope your pitching factory keeps developing some of these young arms. A lot of their top prospects for pitchers now are in the lower minors. You need some of these guys to have good years to push up in the system so that you can then turn around and flip them at the deadline. This is the Yankees with trading young pitchers, the way that they always like to trade these pitching prospects, reminds me of how the New Orleans Saints in the NFL never seem to like take time to fix their cap. They just always restructure bonuses and push things out. And now they're like years into chasing this problem of they've pushed these cap things out and out and out and out and out. And it's finally kind of catching up to them a little bit. And they're still trying to make it work despite all of this dead cap coming in the future. That's like where the Yankees are now, where they keep trading these young arms. And then when disaster happens, and I would argue Gerrit Cole having Tommy John's a disaster. When a disaster happens, now they're in a hard place. And they have to either keep doing that same thing and get even weaker, or they have to just suck for a year and get through it.
Yeah, for sure. And we haven't even brought up the fact that even if they do make a signing to kind of bridge the gap, will the Yankees even be in contention at that point? Will they even? Because, again, without Gerrit Cole, their rotation's not great. It's Max Fried and the boys, and it's a weak rotation, and the American League East has a lot of good batters in it that they're going to face 13 times each. And so it's not looking good for the Yankees, really, no matter what they do. That their best course of action would be to make a trade right now, but again, will they do it? Because it's going to cost so much. It might even cost Jason Dominguez. We haven't even brought that up yet. Not that they'd be willing to move him, I don't think, but
that might be the ask.
That would probably be
Jason Dominguez or Spencer Jones. Yeah. And it's like, which of these are you willing to give up? And if you're not willing to give one of them up, we don't have a deal.
Yeah, exactly.
If I'm the Marlins and I'm doing this for Sandy, my first ask is, I want Spencer Jones and shortstop George Lombard. Like, I want your top two position player prospects, because the Marlins can build pitching too. Like, I want your top two position player prospects. And are the Yankees going to do that? I don't know how desperate they are, but like, that's where the package would start. And Yankees fans are going to say that's too expensive. But when you have the asset this early in the year, you set the price. And that is where the Marlins are going to start the conversation.
Yeah, 100%. And it's also of the Yankees are desperate. So the price is going to be driven up because of how desperate the Yankees are going to be also. So it's going to be a very high asking price. But if the Yankees want to remain in contention for this season, then they need to do something, because it's not looking good right now.
It's really not. Okay. Moving on a little bit. Another thing where it's not looking good right now, the Tampa Bay Rays are playing in a minor league ballpark owned by the Yankees this year because of damage to Tropicana Field. And the damage to Tropicana Field has really thrown a wrench into the whole effort of the Rays to get a new ballpark from St. Pete, right? So the Tampa Bay Rays, to clarify, are not actually playing in Tampa. They're playing in St. Pete. So they're south of the Bay. And it's funny, they're called the Tampa Bay Rays. They're not the team of the body of water, right? It's the metro area. But there's been a lot of back and forth, and owner Stu Sternberg has really kind of, like, the team is somehow kind of threatening to walk away. They want more money in the deal. They claim since the Hurricanes, there's now costs have gone up for the deal. And it's like a $1.3 billion stadium deal. What's going on? The Rays are contributing $700 million, and they're claiming that there's a holdup in construction and costs are gone up and they want the county and all of that to cover more. MLB reportedly, according to Evan Drellich of The Athletic, is not happy with the Rays threatening to walk away from this. And MLB is pressuring behind the scenes, is pressuring Stu Sternberg to sell the team. There are a couple different groups in Tampa, in the Tampa Bay area, who have expressed interest in purchasing the team. One of them is the family of Edward DeBartolo Jr. His members of his family, not him, members of his family own the San Francisco 49ers. One of these people, Joe Molloy, former minority owner of the New York Yankees. There is another ownership group with some local businessmen who are also part of, you know, who are also in groups looking at buying the team. The rule that MLB has in place with these people, MLB wants the franchise to remain in Florida. That is going to be a requirement in the Tampa area, if at all possible, right? There's been lots of conversations about Ybor City, which is over on the Tampa side of the bay. You know, it's a neighborhood down there. It's actually really cool. I like Ybor City a lot. But moving it there, if it's not in St. Pete, there has been discussion. Orlando could be a possibility. But reportedly, the team needs to stay in Florida. Are you in or out on somebody else owning the Rays instead of Stu Sternberg?
See, this one, I know we always talk about wanting teams to spend and spend more money, and the Rays are a team that have always been not willing to do that. But for the Rays, it has worked because they have some of the best development teams in Major League Baseball. They always find a way to develop their prospects very well, or even guys that they get through trade, like Charlie Morton went to Tampa Bay and had that was part of his career resurgence with the Astros. And then, and Zach Eflin went to Tampa Bay and had one of the best stretches of his career when he was with Tampa Bay. So they're one of those pitching factories. So while they haven't spent much money, they still had a modicum of success that other teams that don't spend as much money haven't had. They made it to the World Series a few years ago. But at the same time, you have to think, if they did have that same development staff and coach staff in their organization, but they also spent more money, they might have won that World Series that they were in a few years ago, or they might have been in more World Series than they have been throughout the history of their franchise. I think they've only made it to two World Series in their history of their franchise. One of them, the Philadelphia Phillies one in 2008, and then the other one was a few years ago. And if you got to think that,
was it 2020? No, because that was Dodgers. It was 2019 or 20 or something like that. Anyway, yeah, recently.
Yeah, it was 2020. The Dodgers beat the Rays in that World Series.
That's what it was.
Yeah, but if they spent money plus had that coaching staff, then they would probably be in a lot more World Series. They'd probably be one of the better teams in baseball. So I think that a new ownership that is willing to spend money would do the Rays a load of good.
In a way, you can kind of blame Stu Sternberg for the Los Angeles Dodgers being what they are right now. So hear me out here. When he bought the team in like 2003, he hired Andrew Friedman to run baseball development. He became GM and he became GM in 2005 at the age of 28, right? Super young. And he built the Rays into what they are now, using the advanced analytics, being so good with scouting and development and all of this stuff. But they didn't have the money. And so he left the Rays and went to the Dodgers and took all of the stuff that he developed, all of the knowledge, all of the development, the scouting, all of that kind of stuff, took that to LA. And in LA, he did the same things in LA that he did in Tampa, but he also had an actual payroll. And so, like, I'm not saying that the Rays would become the Dodgers East with a new owner, but you can directly see how the things that they are doing or were doing that were cutting edge became the things that the other top teams were doing, like the Dodgers. Other guys have left the Rays and gone to other organizations and brought in some of those things and done some of those things and gotten better. And so this is a situation. I don't love the idea of like telling the guy he has to sell, but I do like the idea of, at the end of the day, if you have a more sustainable business operation in Tampa, because right now the St. Pete ballpark, like, I've been to that ballpark. I stayed in a hotel across the street when I went down there for a work thing once. It's not a great area. It's not a great ballpark, and they draw poorly, partly because it's so hard to get there, partly because of the area it's in. From what I've seen from the outside, a lot of the other proposals for ballpark locations have not gone through because the Rays weren't willing to spend money on their side to make it happen. The Ybor City thing couldn't go through. And so at the end of the day, I'm fine with this. I just want an owner that'll spend money. And I feel like at this point, with the cost and the value of all of these franchises, I mean, I think in the Athletic piece, Evan Drellich talks about Sternberg bought it for $200 million in 2004. Forbes estimates they're worth $1.25 billion right now. And to actually make the purchase, because of how infrequently these things come on the market, you're probably paying $2 billion. It's impossible to buy these teams and then act like broke boys. Like, you have to spend money because you have to have money to buy them. So yeah, let's do it. Let's go ahead. Let's force the Rays to sell. The new owners have to keep them down there. Give us an awesome Ybor City neighborhood ballpark kind of thing with the whole kind of village around it. Let's do this because it's going to make the league better at the end of the day. And if Stu Sternberg doesn't like it, you should have spent more money.
Yeah, 100%. That should be the tagline of our show. Owners should spend more money. First Pitch, owners should spend more money, because, I mean, I'm right there with you. Owners should spend more money. Stu Sternberg is one of those that should spend more money. As you pointed out, we have seen what happens when you have the development system of the Tampa Bay Rays plus spending more money. So it's right there written out in ink.
Okay. We're going to hold off on this top lineups thing till tomorrow, because we're already kind of getting a little deep into the show here. But let's talk about the Washington Nationals, because you're surprisingly high on the Nationals this year. So let's start with the lineup, right? A lot of youth, okay? They have Josh Bell. They signed him as a free agent to be a DH, age 32. They traded for Nate Lowe or Lau, one of those two, age 29, to play first base. They brought in Paul DeJong as a placeholder at third. He's 31 years old. He'll be at third base until they can get one of their top prospects, Brady House, ready. He wasn't in our IDA camp. He's not even 22 yet. But outside of that, it's the youth movement. CJ Abrams and Luis Garcia in the middle infield. Both those guys are under the age of 25. Keibert Ruiz is 26. Your outfield is 25-year-old dynamic defensive center fielder Jacob Young, and top prospects Dylan Cruz and James Wood, who are 23 and 22. Your bench is a lot of younger guys. You have a veteran outfielder in Alex Call. You have a veteran utility man in the Med Rosario, who's only 29, has been in the league like 7 years. Wild. Thoughts on this lineup for 2025?
Yeah, I like this lineup a lot. I'm very high on this lineup. I think they're all especially the young guys, are going to take another step forward in their development. And you know, you already saw what James Wood can do last year, and I think that he's going to tap into that power potential that he has a little more this year. Because if you look at his frame, he's the same. He's not as big, muscular as Aaron Judge, but he is the same height as Aaron Judge. And so you put some more muscle on him, and he could be right there with Aaron Judge at mashing 50 plus home runs a year. And he already has some power potential that he showed in the minors. And I do think he'll tap into that more this year. Dylan Cruz, he didn't have the best stint in Major League Baseball last year as a late August call up.
It was short.
Yeah. And it was a small sample size. So you got to imagine he'll turn it around this year over a full season. Maybe CJ Abrams won't be going to casinos and staying out till 8 a.m. That's still yet to be seen. I do like the additions of Nathaniel for first base, and Luis Garcia is an unsung part of this lineup. Like he's one of the best parts of this lineup. He had quite possibly the best offensive season on the team last year, and he doesn't get near the recognition that CJ Abrams or James Wood does. I really like this lineup a lot. I think it's honestly, I'm going to get a lot of hate for this probably, but I think this is the third best lineup in the National League East.
Ooh, that's interesting. Yeah, I'm kind of curious who you have outside of that top three. From the considered the common consensus of the Mets, Braves, and Phillies in no certain order. I do think that I've never really thought Keibert Ruiz has been that great behind the plate. 95 WRC plus, he comes out to league average for catchers, right? I think league average for catchers is like 91 or 92. I don't necessarily know how valuable he is as he gets older and he gets into like arbitration years and stuff, but you're in a scenario here where there's some talent that could debut this year, right? Brady House, again, at third base. You've got a bunch of outfielders who you have taken kind of high that you need some guys to figure it out. Elijah Green's not figured it out yet. Robert Hassel made it to AAA. He looked, at one point in time, he was like the centerpiece of the Juan Soto deal. It kind of took a step back. But I like the pieces. I feel like they have some good pieces. It's just a question of, think the major league roster is talented enough, but I just don't know if you have like one enough power potential. And I do feel like they're still a year away. I feel like this might be the get your feet underneath you year for Cruz and Wood and maybe House. And then the year after that is where they kind of maybe take off, but you can absolutely see how they could surprise, right? Bringing in Nathaniel and Josh Bell. Your young outfielders getting time in the majors last year, your young corner outfielders, maybe Jacob Young can take the Brenton Doyle type leap in another year, right? Because Doyle was in a similar situation, amazing defender, struggled offensively. And then Doyle's second year in Colorado, he got much better at the plate. Young could be in a similar situation here. So I can see the upside. I just don't, I tend to think they're a year away, but I could be wrong and they could surprise a year earlier. Pitching staff wise, even with not having Josiah Gray for Tommy John, he went down last July. Am I wrong to think that like I kind of like this pitching staff? Mackenzie Gore, Jake Irvin, Mitchell Parker, three younger guys. I think Gore's the veteran with 3 years of service time. They brought in Trevor Williams. They brought in Michael Soroka, who has looked awesome in spring. Like, holy cow, he's looked really good in spring. And then behind those guys in the minors, you've got Kate Cavalli coming back from Tommy John. You've got DJ Herz. You've got Jackson Rutledge. Like, I don't hate Jarlin Susano. Again, was part of that Soto trade. I don't think he's up this year, but still, you never know. I don't hate the rotation. I don't know if they're a playoff rotation, but it feels like this is a good year to kind of get everybody right. And then you turn around in 26, you're a force.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's we've definitely talked about worse rotations throughout our previews. And this mm-hmm. one is solid, but I agree. It's not a playoff rotation. But my question for you is, how sad are you going to be when Michael Soroka is carving up the Atlanta Braves?
It's going to happen. I know it's going to happen. I wrote a piece over at BravesToday.com, the Braves Today newsletter, about wanting them to go sign Michael Soroka in free agency because he was awful as a starter in Chicago with the White Sox. He moved to the pen and was amazing, and now he's looked amazing as a starter. I wanted them to go sign him. He's the first game he has back in Atlanta, he's going to go like six shutout innings. Like, he's going to just shut down Atlanta, take the under on runs, take the Nats to win that game because he's just going to carve them up.
Yeah, it's crazy to see what he's done after coming back to the National League East and after a stint as a reliever.
And really just kind of losing half his career. He's got 6 years of service time and three of them were spent rehabbing.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that's going to be a what if when it's all said and done because of how much time he's missed. But I do expect a good season from him, and it's a good unit. It's not the best unit. It's certainly not the best in the division, but it is a solid unit for a rotation.
They also did that thing I always ask teams to do. They went out and added a bunch of kind of veteran relievers, right? They signed Jorge Lopez. They signed Lucas Sims. They brought in Colin Pache. They rule five to Evan Reifert, but like three or four guys that you could move at the deadline if you're not in it. I love the idea of teams who are either questionable to contend or not contenders. Go load up on veteran arms, move them at the deadline, and then slot the young guys in for the rest of the season behind them. So, again, same similar situation. Not a great bullpen, not a bad bullpen. It's fine. For the what Washington's going to be this year, I think it's fine. And again, if you're contending, you have the ability to add to it. If you're not contending, you have the ability to send guys out and get more prospects and stuff like that. So I think it's perfectly good. I mean, this is a fourth place team that could, if everything broke right, flex up to a third place team. But I think the floor is high enough where they're not going to be behind the Marlins.
Oh yeah, 100%. I think it would take a bomb hitting their stadium in the middle of a game for them to end up behind the Marlins because it's
a We Are Marshall situation. The plane goes down with half the team on it.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. They're a fourth place team that can surprise people and have the potential, if everything goes right, to be a third place team over the team we're going to talk about tomorrow. But the bullpen, I agree with you. They're probably going to move a lot of these guys. I think they're going to be an above 500 team when all is said and done. I think they're going to finally break through that threshold. It might be one or two games above 500, but
they're going to do it.
Yeah, I do think they'll do it this year.
Nice. I think the Fangraphs prediction is 71 and 91. I think we're both solidly in the over on this. We think they're going to do better than that. So, yeah. I don't quite have them finishing at 500. I have them somewhere at like 460, 470, but I have them better than 438. So, there we go. Let us know what you think. You're listening on audio. You can reach out to us. I'm on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's at Troy B Baseball. If you're on YouTube, leave a comment down below. While you're also here, do us a favor, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell so you know when we drop that next episode, and send all your friends to firstpitchpodcast.com to get every episode of this show. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.